Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben.
All right.
Presented by Brakes Plus and... I love this question because it just, I don't know, regrettably, I just don't think it's gotten enough attention. And part of it, I think, is baseball's fault. Mark, is Larry Walker the greatest Rocky in your opinion?
Yes.
Without a doubt?
Yeah.
Why? What makes him the greatest?
Dude. That dude could roll out of bed after a three-day bender and go 3 for 5 with two doubles and a homer. That dude in the outfield was ridiculous. Just defensively, he was, I mean, the guy was a magician out there. Arm talent, all those things. Now, hey, Nolan Arenado is the best defender I've watched in my lifetime at third base. No question about it. But Nolan Arenado is not, in my mind, what Larry Walker was at the dish or what Larry Walker was running the bases. You know, when they say five tool, I think sometimes we throw that term around loosely, five tool. But if you really study baseball and you're around baseball a lot, there are very few people, very few guys that are truly five tool players. And that's one of the only ones I've ever seen. Nolan could not, he couldn't hold a candle on the base pass to Larry Walker. Not a candle. Both of them extremely efficient defenders. Don't get me wrong. And Nolan Arenado is not what Larry Walker was at the dish. So I'm sorry. I love Nolan. I think Nolan's a Hall of Famer too. But Larry Walker was... Larry Walker's a guy that you bought a ticket to go watch.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few.
Absolutely.
There are very few of those guys. Hey, Todd Helton was an outstanding defender at first base. That dude, you know, whatever their metric is for saving runs, that dude saved runs, man. His ability to scoop things, especially with the sunshine going down in Coors Field in the evenings, you know, early innings. I mean, it's hard. He was great at first base. He was a outstanding hitter. He didn't have the power that Larry Walker had, but he couldn't run the bases like Larry Walker could run the bases. Come on. Larry Walker could do it all. Listen, man, that's when I was coaching Little League Baseball. That's when I was really like learning the game through my son and through coaching and getting as much information as I could. And we'd go to Rocky spring training and we'd get carte blanche of the organization. I'd be in the locker room with my son. I would get, you know, coaching points. Todd Helton would give Daniel coaching points. The pitching coaches would, you know, he'd throw bullpens, live bull. Scott Service would catch him. I mean, I was learning so much about the game. I loved the game and learning so much about it. And when you started really studying it and watching Larry Walker, like I said, I buy a ticket to watch him play.
The thing about him is, and we toss this term around a lot, maybe too loosely, you know, genius. But Larry Walker was a baseball genius.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of geniuses never embarked on being a genius. They were just a genius. This guy wasn't a grinder. This wasn't a guy who, like, you know, studied the game from all different angles and overachieved his way to a career. This guy was a baseball natural. This was a guy who didn't grow up playing baseball. This was a guy who had to have the nuances of the game taught to him in the early levels of being a professional.
Right.
Okay? But he was just a baseball savant.
He was
just one of those kids that could walk up to a piano, sit down and start playing Chopin or something like that. I mean, just crazy how easy he made playing the game look. A sport that is incredibly hard to play, he made it look easy, really, without even trying.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point. Like, the geniuses don't wake up and say, hey, let me go be a genius. Like, I'm going to go work to be a genius. They're just gifted that way. They've been gifted from the hand of God, and that's great. you know, depending upon how they use it, it's awesome. But yeah, Larry was one of those guys, and I'm not saying that Larry didn't work hard and Larry didn't study his grad and all that stuff, but he was so far ahead of the game when it came to just, you know, when it came to just being purely touched by the hand of God to play the game.
I have Adam Schefter from ESPN on the line. He heard a rumor.
Oh, great. Tell Schefter to stick his rumor up.
Sonny.
Adam Schefter, our NFL insider from ESPN, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook as we embark on another NFL season. Adam checking his sources. Two phones going at the same time.
Oh, you know it.
Man, we can't wait. We're so happy to have him with us. Good morning, Adam. How are you?
Here we are, right? Start of the year. Unbelievable. Here we go again.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, start off tonight. We got Thursday night football. We've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the defending champions, the Dallas Cowboys. Expectations, Adam, for these two teams?
Well, I think Tampa, to start with, is just loaded, right? Like, you've got a Buccaneers team. How often do you see Stank? And you were a part of this. You know, all 22 starters from a defending Super Bowl champion team come back and return the next year. And they don't lose a coordinator at all. So, I mean, this is a team that's got continuity and it's got talent. And not only are all the guys coming back, but then there's some other injured guys like O.J. Howard who are back from injury. And Tom Brady's in the offense for another year. He is familiar with the system, the players, the coaches. Look, last year when he went down there, he didn't know what he was doing. He didn't know where he was going. He didn't know the people, so much so that he made plans to instead of the playbook at Byron Leftwich's house and walked into the house of some unknowing stranger. Can you imagine being the guy during a pandemic who's working in his home office with Tom Brady watching the front door looking for Byron Leftwich?
Yeah, amazing, right?
That story still remains one of the best stories of last year.
last year was an NFL season unlike any other. Adam, do you expect, should we expect as fans when we sit down to watch the NFL this year, will things be different from last year? Will the games look different? Will they be played differently, called differently?
Well, I think we've got some changes. The jersey numbers are a big thing. We've heard Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers speak out against it already. They don't like that. You know, players can wear whatever numbers they want. We've got the 17th game, so it's a longer season than we've ever had, the longest regular season in NFL history. There was a preseason this year, unlike last year, so maybe guys go in to the season a little bit more finely tuned, even action in the year. And I always worry about that because I just think it's a big threat in this day and age, especially when they don't play in a lot of preseason games. Is the game going to look different? I think the game will look how it looks. It continues to evolve into more of a passing, fantasy-friendly type of NFL offense. Less like the one that Stink played in for years and years and more like the one that's high-tech. It's 7-on-7 and spread the offenses and no quarterback under center and just a little bit different like that. But we've seen that before.
Let me ask you about the holding, because last year there was a moratorium on holding calls. And I was in one of those meetings where they said, hey, listen, on the backside, you know, if you're not affecting like a wide running player or whatever, don't call it. Even if the guy gets, you know, jerked down, don't call it. Are we going to go back? Is there going to be kind of a happy medium? Are we going to go back to seeing a little bit more holding call, a little bit fairer kind of fair play there? Or have we already set the standard and we're just going to stay with it?
Well, did you like it that way last year or not, Stink?
I always hate it when offensive linemen get called for holding. But I think it needs to be a little bit fairer. I think it needs to be better. Yeah, so that you can play defense. So, yeah, I didn't like it that way, and I think it should be, you know, I think it should be called accordingly.
Well, to me, the league office should be listening to what people like you are saying. Like, who knows more about that than you? Nobody. And so if you believe that, then that's what I believe too. I've had too many strong feelings on holding penalties in my life up until now. So my feeling is that the league office should be listening to you about what they should be doing regarding holding. I have not heard that it'll be called any more or less frequently. The one penalty that we've heard about this year was taunting, which was called quite a bit in the preseason to the unhappiness of many players and fans across the country. And I think that the league was just trying to show then that the point of emphasis
that the league is going to. Whereas in other years, they kept their whistles in the pocket and didn't call it. This year, though, that'll be another change. I think that taunting penalty will be enforced, but I don't know how the holdings will turn out, Stink.
Adam, Sam Farmer, the Hall of Fame writer for the LA Times, did a big piece on how the NFL got through last year. And the nugget that was most interesting to us was John Elway reaching out to Roger Goodell, begging the game to be moved back. And then the idea that the punishment came down because the quarterbacks purposely put the tracers in different corners of the room. Based on your understanding, was that the reason why the Broncos got penalized as severely as they did? Or were there other factors at play as well?
What I remember about that particular situation, there are many things that I remember about that situation. I remember getting a call. It was Saturday afternoon, and somebody called and they said, are you aware of what's going on in Denver? And I said, no. And they said, Denver doesn't have any quarterbacks. And I said, what? And so I called out to a bunch of Broncos people, and it was tough to get somebody initially on the phone. Finally, I was able to get somebody who corroborated what I had been told about 30 minutes before, which was that Denver had no quarterbacks. And I do know that John Elway and Joe Ellis were arguing vehemently with the NFL and pleading their case and asking the league to delay the game or push it back. I think they wanted them to push it back to like Monday, but there have been some other games that have been pushed back to Monday, and the league didn't want to do a doubleheader, especially considering that it felt like Denver was responsible for its own irresponsible actions. And I didn't know about these specific tracers in the corner of the room, but I did know that the league felt that the Broncos deserved what they got and that they didn't deserve, at that time, in the league's opinion, to give Denver any breaks. Like, this is something that you brought on yourself, and we're not going to be in the business of helping you out, because if we help you out, then what's this to help out every other team that has any sort of issues when they don't obey the rules? And I do remember there being complaints about the quarterbacks not wearing masks around each other and obviously being close contacts, which is why the situation resulted the way it did. And then Denver playing the game against the Saints how they did.
Yeah, no question about it. There were a lot of other, I think, circumstances, because the league moved games every day of the week. We had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday games, and they were unwilling to do that. Adam, man, we appreciate you, buddy. Enjoy the game tonight, man. It's so good to have football back.
Yeah, guys, thank you very much. Have a great season. Nice to be with you always, and hopefully it's a fun week one.
There he goes, Adam Schefter, our NFL insider from ESPN, presented by BetRivers Sportsbook. I want to push you a little bit here, because
please.
You've implied on more than one occasion that this went beyond just the quarterbacks,
sure,
trying to, game the system. Because, boy, when you talk about doing something as severe as sending an NFL team out with no quarterbacks, I get what the Broncos quarterbacks did wasn't right. And I get that they need to be penalized, punished. Mm-hmm. I just question whether or not the punishment fits the crime here.
Right.
To that level, which makes me think, and I always thought this in the whole going through this thing, even when it started, that it seemed a little much. And you've said on more than one occasion, kind of leaving it out there, that, yeah, there was more. Now, I don't know how much you want to reveal, but you're convinced there was more.
Well,
that led to this.
Yeah, I mean, some of it, again,
other than what the quarterbacks did.
Right. I think there's a couple things. I think that when in the NFL's eyes, if you commit the crime and they come to you and say, hey, you committed this crime, the number one rule is like parenting. Don't lie to me. And we're going to deal with whatever consequence we're going to come up with as a parent for you. But if you lie to me, that consequence is going to be exponentially tougher. So I think initially, from the quarterback room, they lied. And you know what? That's one of the reasons the punishment was more difficult. The other thing is, I think there were some other violations during the season. This is what I've heard from reliable people. And take it for what it's worth. There's always gossip and rumors and stuff here. So I don't want to throw it out there. But there had been other violations the league had let slide. I mean, everything's filmed. You know, all the facilities.
Not involving the quarterbacks.
No, not involving the quarterbacks. But just other things. And again, I think they were extended grace because we all screwed up. How many times have I, you know, when there was a mask mandate, when I walked out of my car into the grocery store and then went, ah, shoot, and had to do a U-turn.
Yep.
And I did that.
Yep.
And it happens. And so there was the grace that was extended for some of those instances over the course of the season, which every team had. Every team had a violation, or, you know, from that standpoint. But when you don't come forth, when you don't come clean with the league initially, and then they go back and look and review and they see that you lied, that's a problem.
Well, it's like the Patriots and Spygate. They didn't get ultimately punished for that one moment. The league had already put all NFL teams on notice.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were several teams that were filming signals. And
oh, sure.
There's
a bunch of teams.
Bunch of teams are doing it. And the NFL finally said, enough's enough.
They sent out a company-wide letter to every team, stop doing this.
And then they did it again. And that's why they got hammered.
Absolutely.
And I think in the case here with the Broncos, and I know the quarterbacks have taken the blame for this, and they certainly deserve their share. But if you look at the way the NFL conducts business, and if you look at Spygate as another example, I don't think you just have this one incident and a league comes down on you like that to the point where you're not playing with quarterbacks.
Mm.
So what that tells me is that the league had put the Broncos on notice about other things, and then this was the final straw that said, okay, fine.
Well, that's what I've heard. I don't have all the inside information. I don't really care. You know, the bottom line is they screwed up and they got punished for it. And they were essentially made an example to the whole league. And hey man, you know what? It's like Beretta. You remember Beretta back in the day? Robert Blake and Beretta?
Yes.
Don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Right.
So.
I thought that was Who Loves You, Baby.
Yeah, they did the crime.
Oh, that was, never mind. Never mind.
I don't know. That's an old reference.
Old reference.
But, yeah, I mean, that,
stay away from
all those things. All those things came to fruition, and they ended up having to play a game without a quarterback. And it's, you know, and Sam Farmer just confirmed a lot of the things that I've been told.
Here's the other thing about it. I'm going back and looking at Drew Locke's statement that he made right after it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that these statements are not written by the player.
Right.
They're written by the PR department. So here's what bugs me about this statement. As a proud member of the Denver Broncos, I can attest that our entire team has taken the COVID-19 pandemic seriously, following all the rules to keep each other safe. We're tested daily, get quick results, and are confident our facility is a safe environment for everyone. In a controlled and socially distanced area, we let our masking slip for a limited amount of time. An honest mistake, but one I will own. I sincerely apologize, blah, 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 blah.
Mm.
Why did the Broncos PR ultimately set up Drew Locke to look like a liar? Because this wasn't about masks slipping. This was about trying to openly deceive by, let's take our tracers off, let's put one in that corner, one in that corner, one in that corner. I mean, that was a well-thought-out plan of deception.
Yes.
And this statement comes back to haunt somebody like Drew Locke.
Sure.
Who has done no favors by the team.
Correct. They're trying to mitigate.
They tried to mitigate and cover it up as well.
They try, absolutely. And again, one of the reasons they got punished.
After they got caught, they still tried
Right.
To cover it up.
Well, what they try to do is put a public spin on it. So that, you know, people like us aren't talking about it. Been better just it's just better to come out and say, hey man, I screwed up. This is what I did. It was stupid. And, I throw myself on the mercy of the people. You know, I mean, it probably in hindsight is better to do that, but you chose to go, you know, the PR way and give me the, or give us the honest, it's just an honest mistake. It was a mask slippage. My mask slipped. So again, is it the most egregious violation? No. I mean, it's COVID, it's rules, it's, you know, all this, that, and the other. I get it all. I get how frustrating it can be and all that stuff. But yeah, you deliberately tried to deceive the league and then you lied to the league.
But the reason, well,
there's a reason that Denver Broncos, like, if it was just an innocent mask slippage, would the Broncos have fined each quarterback? I mean, just use logic, just for the sake of argument, just use logic. They wouldn't have fined the guys. They just, you know, no, they wouldn't have fined those guys.
Boy, we've gone a long way from the initial state-sponsored media reports that they were just eating lunch.
Just having lunch together.
Having lunch, had to eat. Had to lower our mask to eat.
Man, that roast beef looks good. Can I have a bite?
On the text line, guys, it's clear. The bottom line, it was a maturity issue within the quarterback room. It was times like this that we sorely miss Paxton Lynch for his maturity and work ethic.
Wouldn't have happened. Hey, guys.
Good head.
You know why it wouldn't happen?
Good head, your middle issue June guy right there.
Because Paxton would have been at home playing video games. He'd have been eligible. It'd have been one of his only starts. Last year would have been one of his only starts. Because he'd have been the only one that wasn't there on Tuesday looking at film. He'd have been like, what? Oh, you had a film to study?
What, I'm playing Sunday?
Right. Whoa. Who's the coordinator?
Where's my playbook?
Yeah, I better get with the coordinator. What are we running?
I got my playbook. Blow the dust off it.
We need our handy dandy notebook.
We're going to pass it some, and then we're going to run it some. Well, that's just seamless. That's great.
Stephen Lakewood, maybe it's just me. I just don't give a hoot about this. Well, here, and I get it. What does it mean for the team right now? A whole lot of nothing, probably. But does it explain, is it part of the reason why this team finds themselves in the situation that they find themselves in now? And what they've gone through the last 5 years.
Sure.
And the kind of things that were allowed to slip and covered up, mm-hmm. weren't addressed. It does speak to leadership.
Playing silly games.
From the top on down.
100% Mike.
So... You know, to say this is no big deal, I'd say it's part and parcel of a big deal why they're in the situation they find themselves in.
Obviously, they haven't won here in 5 years.
Five years. Thank you, George.
When you make a decision, like you make a decision as a parent, and you're setting a curfew or you're doing whatever, do you take all the factors in that your son or daughter... A good student, never has been in trouble.
Sure.
You take all those things into consideration. You think you're not taking everything into consideration when you're picking the quarterback of your franchise? Do you think that decision last year doesn't affect the decision this year when it comes to, hey, we're developing an offense. We've got a lot of young players on our roster. We need the maturity and the leadership that is going to help those guys develop to their best. You don't think that goes in the back of your mind?
Yeah, but I don't want to make Drew a villain in this because
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm not saying that he's a villain, but I'm saying if I'm making a decision, Mike, and I'm looking at every factor in who's going to lead my football team on Sunday
at the quarterback position, if I don't take that into consideration, I am not giving the Broncos the best chance. I'm malfeasance. There's malfeasance in the duty that I have to the organization to not take everything into consideration when it comes to picking that guy who's going to be the best leader and the best developer of my offense.
By the way,
I used a big word.
A lot of texters are just insisting that we not let this go. Who loves you, baby? The great Telly Savalas.
Ah, Telly.
Who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby?
While sucking on a lollipop. All right. Coming up next. Well, at least there's one Bronco who appears to be mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore. Hear what he has to say next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
Well, the Broncos publicly, to a man, understand the need to get off to a fast start. They understand that they've struggled in September. But I haven't heard a lot of, like, defiance, you know, from any of the players. But I heard some of it yesterday from Melvin Gordon, and boy, it was refreshing to hear.
It's a lot of guys that are hungry. We've been saying it, you know. We've been in position last year where it wasn't good. We started slow, you know. We made good runs coming back, but being in that hole, man, is not a good feeling. You know, coming down that stretch where it's like you have to win to get in is not a good feeling. You know, you want to know you have some security. You want that bye. I've been a part of a winning team before, and it's just the atmosphere is just so much better, man. When you're losing, everyone can feel it. You know, everything is so tense. You know, it is what it is. It's just that's part of the game, man. It's everyone's tense. Everyone's on edge. When you walk around, it's just tough. But when you're winning, it's just loose. You know, it's loose. It's a better atmosphere. It's a better place to be. And, you know, for those rookies that came in last year, you know, they don't know how that feels. You know, and we kind of want to get them that. You know, Teddy's been part of a winning season. I've had a winning season. Some guys in here had some winning seasons before, especially other guys that have been with different teams. But we want to bring that here because this, you know, this is a winning culture here. You know, and we want to get that Super Bowl. And we want to know how it feels. We're tired of looking at Patrick Mahomes holding up and Tom Brady holding up the trophy at the end of the year. We want to change that, man. So to do that, we got to stack those W's.
Your reaction when you hear that?
He's right about how losing just drains the life force out of you. It's hard. And have had a winning locker room is loose. It's fun. You're goofing, you're having a good time, you're busting each other's humps, you know, you're doing all those things. The difference is when it's time to go to work and you're a winning organization, you flip the switch from loose and having fun and doing all those things to going to work, to being dialed in, to being precise. You can still have fun doing that. But my experience, and, you know, I had I had some losing seasons, you know, at the end of my career in Washington and one here in Denver, only one out of 6 years. So, but I know what it feels like, but I know more importantly what it feels like to win and be a champion. And those teams knew how to work. They knew how to prepare. They knew how to study. They knew how to have fun. It was a blast. But when it came down to rubber meets the road, they knew how to get it done, and they knew how to grind. And I think that's the difference, Mike. Losing teams walk around in a, what's the word, malaise, and they practice that way. They prepare that way.
they study that way. They don't know how to get out of that funk. And that's real.
Listening to Gordon talk, what jumped out at me is that I have no doubt that this is a hungry team. I have no doubt that this is a team that probably is tired of losing.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how do you do something about it if you don't really know what it looks like? And you don't have a culture. And you don't have an identity. We spent all season, off season, talking about how this team needs to establish a culture, needs to establish an identity. They don't have one. So they don't know what to draw on to get back to that level. And when I'm hearing Gordon talk about, you know, I've been part of a winning season. This guy's been part of a winning season. Teddy's been part of a winning season. But you look at the guys that are the guys with the most winning experience on this team. I'm just going up and down the roster. Put aside Von Miller for a second, okay?
Yeah.
He knows what it's like to win a Super Bowl. But put aside from him, who you got? I mean, you got Teddy Bridgewater, who's part of a good Saints team. You got Melvin Gordon, who had limited success with the Chargers.
I think they had one playoff run where he was there, maybe two.
Kyle Fuller, Bryce Callahan, part of some good, but not great Chicago teams. And I just wonder who are the guys on this team that can do something about it, can say that we're tired of losing, but actually have the kind of experience to draw on that says, I know what we need to get back to, and this is how you do it. I just get the sense that all these guys are just kind of looking to the next guy.
Right.
To get it done, or to show me how to get it done. And is that a recipe for success?
Yeah, no, probably that's not. I mean, that's what we've been talking about for a while. And I think, you know, I think there are times, you know, during the course of my career where the coaches cracked the whip because the practice wasn't going the way they wanted a practice to go or whatever. But 9 times out of 10, it was the players. It was the players that said, pick it up. And you know, the other thing was, Mike, is you knew there was going to be punishment. Like, if we don't pick it up, guess who'll take care of it? Shanahan will take care of it. If we don't pick it up, I guarantee you, you don't want the little general over there, you know, you don't want the little general Alex Gibbs picking it up for us. And there was that prevailing attitude. We knew what our responsibility was, right? And it goes back to something that my dad always said to me, and it was something that was very true. It holds true to every facet of life as just a person in general, but it certainly plays into the football realm. Too many guys know their rights, not enough know their responsibilities. You have a responsibility to every player, every coach, every trainer, every equipment manager, every person who works in that facility to go out there and set a tone.
Yeah.
That's your responsibility. Too many guys know, hey, wait a minute, we can't be out there for the extra 15 minutes. Report that to the, right?
Players Association.
I mean, wasn't it our team that had one of the big Players Association issues with OTAs?
That's not in the CBA!
I know my rights. What's your responsibility? Your responsibility as a public trust is to go out there and bust your ass.
Good point by this texter.
Okay.
He says, what's Melvin Gordon talking about? Kermit's won one Super Bowl. Don't put that goofball in the same category as Brady. Good point. Says we're getting tired of watching Patrick Mahomes lift the Super Bowl trophy and Tom Brady lift the trophy. Don't put Mahomes in that category right away.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you know, he's been to 2 in a row. 1-1.
Mm-hmm. Scored 9 points in the other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And lost to the GOAT. Don't put him in.
I love Tom Brady.
Brady's class. Easy, Chief fan.
What was the quote I heard that Tom Brady said about, I'm not chasing Joe Montana. I'm chasing Michael Jordan.
Oh.
Right?
Did you just
Chills.
Did you just have a moment?
I just had a moment.
Yeah, I did.
Did you just
I
get did. Some goosebumps?
Yeah.
Oh, look at the hair on my arm.
I get a little.
Look at the hair on my back. Standing up.
Right. It's poking out of your shirt. I mean, that's if I, what are you? You got a bearskin rug on the back of your back?
Things are like porcupine quills.
Yeah. You didn't get waxed for your boys' trip, so that was.
You're right, I didn't.
Yeah.
You shame me.
Yeah, you.
You totally shame me.
For your own good, I did. You're welcome.
I was going to do it.
You're welcome.
Peer pressure for Mark Schlereth.
Yeah.
All right. All right. And no, we don't have to say anything nice about, we didn't say anything nice about Mahomes, so
yeah.
Don't have to pay it off.
Music.
Nope, don't have to do it.
And we won't.
Okay. NFL season kicks off tonight. Let's give some fearless predictions for the NFL season. That's coming up next. All right, so the NFL season kicks off tonight. You'll hear the game here on The Fan. Tampa Bay, and Dallas. Kickoff to the NFL season. And
I've been thinking about it a lot in the shower.
Let's just kind of, you know, 38,000-foot view of the league. Start in the NFC. Can you point to any two clear-cut favorites in the NFC?
Well, Tampa would have to be a favorite in the NFC.
So Tampa, I mean, this is a team, hey, all due respect, they won the Super Bowl. I get it. They were 7-5. They played a road wild card game. And now people are talking about them like they can go 17-0. I mean, they were really impressive in the Super Bowl, but come on.
I think
they're that much of a slam dunk?
Again, I think defensively they are just so good. And I think Todd Bowles does such a great job of putting you behind the sticks so that he can be uber aggressive. And where he is, like, he is one of the top, they're one of the top blitzing units in early downs so that they can play coverage in later downs. And you almost think about them, it's almost opposite of the way you think. Like, you think third down blitz, bring pressure, bring, you know, all that stuff. It's third down play coverage. First down, blitz, get you in second down and long, and then make you play a third and seven, legitimately. So they're just almost built backwards that way. He does a great job with that stuff. Their back end players. I think it's Carlton Davis is great. Jamal Dean is a great player. Murphy Bunting is a really good corner. Antoine Winfield Jr. is phenomenal in the back end. They got some dudes. And then, you know, they can rush the passer. So I think they're that good. And I think offensively last year, you saw the growing pains. You saw the amalgamation of two kind of different philosophies in what Tom Brady wants versus what Bruce Arians wants. And they found a happy medium. They started growing. I think you just have to feel that they're going to get better. And if they're healthy, because they weren't healthy at the beginning of last year, if they're healthy, then they could be dynamic.
So I see six teams in the NFC that I think are all championship game caliber teams.
Okay.
Six. San Francisco, L.A., Seattle, Tampa, New Orleans, Green Bay.
But Jameis Winston making a big bounce back
but I guess what I'm subscribing to is your belief that this is a really good roster.
It is an outstanding roster.
And that he'll get the Peyton bump, you know, kind of like the Bridgewater bump that we saw when Teddy was there for a while. So I think that they'll be in the mix.
All right. I'm good.
But I can't tell you who the clear cut favorite or favorites is, unlike the AFC. Move over to the AFC. All right, by the way, if you had to call your shot right now, two teams that play in the NFC championship game.
It's hard. I think I would definitely put Tampa in there, and then I'd probably go either Green Bay or the Rams. But again, like you said, I could see Seattle getting there. I could see the 49ers getting there. I could see that there's a lot of different scenarios that I could give you
I'd put Tampa in one spot, and then I'd say there's four teams that I think can make the other spot.
Okay. I'll go Tampa, San Francisco.
Okay.
All right. Faith in Kyle. AFC.
There's really two
there's
teams.
Two teams, right?
Buffalo and there's Kansas City.
And then the second tier is intriguing.
Right.
But are the Broncos part of that second tier? Are they in the second tier with Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cleveland, Miami, New England, Tennessee, Indy?
See, I would split that up into third.
Chargers.
I'd split that up in three tiers.
Buffalo and Kansas City.
Right. And then I would say Cleveland, Baltimore. And then I would say now they're in the mix with Miami, Pittsburgh, Chargers. Who else did you
have? Colts, Titans, Patriots.
Broncos.
Although you like the Titans a lot.
I do like the Titans. I like the way. Now, again, Arthur Smith, their former offensive coordinator, moved on. And now he is with Atlanta as the head coach.
Yep.
So how seamless is that transition? Because what they do offensively, to me, is big time. They completely dominate the line of scrimmage. They run the snot out of the ball. And now they added Julio Jones. If Julio Jones is healthy, forget about it.
Yeah,
they could be really, they could be, especially with A.J. Brown on the other side.
Yep.
They could be really good.
And don't forget about Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so give me your prediction for the AFC. Is it just easy? Just take Kansas City or Buffalo? Or do you want to put a surprise team in there? I'm ready to.
I am too. And my surprise team isn't, I'm not bumping Kansas City up.
No. Nope.
I could see a regression in Buffalo.
Right. All right, so, then who takes their place? We both agree with Kansas City.
Okay. I think there's two teams that intrigue me. Cleveland and Tennessee, just because of the way they operate.
Yeah.
They both run the snot out of the ball.
I was going to go Cleveland.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think Cleveland defensively, they're a problem. Like, they're a problem for people. They have got some unbelievable defensive line pass rush ability. So I'm with you. I'll go Cleveland on that as well.
Yeah, Cleveland's a great example of
build your roster,
and then you just all you need then is just good, competent quarterback play. You don't need Baker Mayfield's not a spectacular quarterback.
No, just remember
he's good, he's efficient, and that'll win it for you.
Remember, like you know,
need to spend a number one overall pick on that kind of quarterback. But
our little buddy in the afternoon. Thanks. I mean. You know, how he studies college football. So if he was studying college football.
Folks, a lot of air quotes getting thrown out right now.
If he was studying college football, then Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray weren't on his map during the college football season. Neither was Joe Burrow because they were second round picks. They were khaki pants picks when the college football season started their last year in
That's
college.
Correct.
They were all
midway through the season. They were still considered
right. So even if he was studying college football,
more air quotes,
in October, they still weren't on his board because they were second and third round potential picks, and Burrow was a seventh rounder. Then at the end of the college football season, while he was studying it, he suddenly changed his mind because now they were all considered first rounders, maybe number one overall. So then it became very apparent through all his film study that those were the guys that he needed. The absolute garbage. I mean, the absolute, just the insanity.
Yeah.
Of that process.
Yeah. Well, you're Island Girl.
But Walter Camp told me that was the way it was, so it must be true.
Well, I don't think I've ever seen anybody do as many air quotes as you just did right there.
Oh, my gosh.
There's just one constant air quote, air quote, air quote, air quote. You are savage. just savage.
If Tyler Columbus has any hair on his chest,
now you're calling out Tyler.
He needs to go after the little guy. Go after. All right, Tyler. Mount Columbus. Go ahead and speak. The gauntlet's been thrown down. What are you going to do about it?
I love this.
Make sure this is recorded. Make sure this is hash brown. Send it to the internet. Make sure Richie has it. See how they respond. I love them too. At the end of the day, we're all brothers here in this fraternity. We all get along. We all love each other, but we love busting each other's.
Yeah. He's not tall.
Onions. Okay, we're done. Mark, have a safe trip.
Thank you, buddy.
I'll speak to you tomorrow from New York, New Jersey. Where will you be?
I'll be in Jersey.
All right, we'll talk to you there. Congratulations, by the way, real quick. He reached the button challenge 241.6.
Yes,
this
indeed.
This morning.
Thank
well
you.
Done.
No dairy, no wheat, no artificial sweet. I leave you with that.
Chad and Nate next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.